This episode of One Footer in the Grave is brought to you by Toff's Top Hats.
Sorry.
Welcome to this, the One Footer in the Grave general election special.
Oh, bloody hell, is it?
I'm Andy Clark, and joining me on the panel today are, representing Winchester, Sir Marcus Lillington from Whitney, the Right Honourable John Hicks.
Yeah, order!
And representing Blandford Forum, the Right Royal Pain in the Arse, Paul Boag.
Hello, my lovers.
Bit of politics, is it?
Now, this is the election special. What is it that makes this election special special? Well, compared to all the others, it's the only election programme where Nigel Farage hasn't been invited.
Yay!
I did get in touch with his PR department, but...
And he wasn't available.
No.
I thought we'd have a slight change of topic for today and talk about the election, but without talking about politics.
That's going to be really hard, but yeah, okay.
We can talk about the campaign. We could, you know, we could maybe talk about Rish announcing it.
And in the
pouring rain.
That was fun.
With things can only get wetter playing in the background.
Is it still raining?
Or we could talk about him. We could talk about him then moving on to Northern Ireland. And doing a press event outside the Titanic Museum. And then flying back to mainland UK and being photographed under an exit sign.
Oh, there you go. That's covered that.
And then today, the one that I saw today was a presser where he was obviously trying to appeal to the farming community.
Oh, right.
And he was out there trying to feed sheep. Now, you know what sheep are like. They'll eat fucking everything. Mm. But no, he goes there with a bucket of sheep food and the sheep run away. You couldn't make this stuff up.
I particularly love the one where, was it the Titanic one? But there was a girl in the background who was rolling her eyes. Really, really visibly.
The bloke came on and he had to stand in
front of her. And you can see him get his phone and he can see, oh, I'm getting a message to go and stand in front of this woman. Like, oh, which one is it? Like, and shuffled in front of her. Superb. I mean, you know, like the thick of it, you can just imagine like a sort of a Malcolm Tucker in the background.
Yeah.
Quick, get over there.
Yeah.
You fuck.
It has been unbelievably bad.
But it's the likes of Farage and Trump, and this might be a bit... This is not left or right politics. It's just they talk such crap and they do it in such a way that they don't listen to anyone that I can't watch it. I just can't watch it. I can't watch even either of those two people messing up. Mm. I just can't watch it. It's like, make it go away, make it stop. So I just sort of... I'm just waiting for something new to happen and then I might re-engage, you never know.
I just can't believe that we're, you know, in the G8 of the most powerful nations in the world or whatever, and yet we cannot afford to have, like, somewhere where the press can meet with the Prime Minister that isn't outside.
You mean,
you know,
somewhere that they
some kind of
spent millions on previously to, like, a nice big lectern?
Yeah.
Because they've got that.
Or even just, what about a carport or a gazebo?
Yeah.
You know.
You do wonder why they didn't bring out the Union Jack umbrellas.
Yeah. I think someone in the PR department said, oh, you go and stand in the rain, people will take pity on you. They'll feel sorry and you'll get that vote.
No. I think it was the opposite. I think there was somebody inside of the Conservative Party who's actually a Labour or Reform supporter who thought, let this happen outside because, you know, maybe then someone will take a pot shot at it. You know, because there's no way it happened in America, is there? There's no way they would do something like that outside because it's too risky over there, isn't it?
When you started talking about when there was someone inside, I thought you were going to say someone inside the Rishi Sunak suit. Like... I was sort of picturing these like little minions of like conservative parties,
sort
of
very little minion
operating the Rishi bot or something. Yeah. Sorry, Marcus.
You're right, Marcus. He is surprisingly small, isn't he? I didn't realise how short he was.
Hey, now, come on. Yes. We can't criticise him for his size.
I'm not criticising. I was just surprised. I didn't realise that he was that's good. That
compared to the two previous predecessors, he's not that bad. I mean, he needs to go. My God, does he need to go? But compared to
I thought you were talking about height there for a minute.
But you know, Lettuce and Fat Toff, they're much worse than he is. He's just bland. You're probably right about go out in the rain. They'll feel sorry for you. That's probably the truth.
They'll forget that you like made your millions on some terrible hedge fund deals back in the banks to crash and we had to bail them out. We're not talking about politics, so we're not going to go into that.
But when you obviously Rishi Sunak is doing his thing. Keir Starmer is being like, I'm not going to put a foot out of place. And Ed Davey from the Liberal Democrats is just going, fuck it. I'll do anything.
Yeah. I'll say anything. I'll do anything to anyone.
Yep. Yeah, I'd like... How about this, Ed? Let's announce a major policy initiative on the back of a rodeo horse. He goes, I'm up for that.
Yes. Free fish and chips to every household per week.
Ooh, that'd be a winner, wouldn't it? I mean, yeah. That would be a winner.
Yeah, but is that a costed plan?
Oh, yeah,
We've done the sums.
I like the fact that our entire election has been announced and will be finished before the Americans have even woken up. Do you know what I mean? Their campaigns go on for like months and months and months.
Basically, they have a 4-year term, and the last year is campaigning for the next one.
Except they actually say I'm basing this on West Wing. I was about to say something with utter authority, like when it's actually based on West Wing. But they reckon that the first 100 days in office are really the only opportunity to not be thinking about the next election.
Outrageous, isn't it?
It is.
Mm.
So, in that sense, our system is better, I guess.
Did you see that I went on Question Time?
Oh, you went on Question Time?
You haven't mentioned that.
You didn't mention that.
Did you?
No. No clue.
Wow. We gave you lots of questions as well. And you didn't ask any of them.
Mm.
You then went on something else, didn't you? Were you on...
Well, here's the thing. Right? So when you sign up to something like this, you apply to go on a show like Question Time. It's not the BBC that are doing the kind of, the audience booking. It's, some kind of consulting company. So there's a little box and it says, do you want to be considered for other similar programmes?
Right.
So I just ticked the box. I thought, I'll get on the telly as often as I can. For what?
He's a fame whore.
Attention whore. So then I got another email and another phone call from the same company saying, "Ooh, do you want to come on the 7-way debate on ITV? And I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. I'll do that. So I applied and I spoke to the person and then they say, "Oh, could you send me your social media feeds again, just so they can look at your Twitter or whatever." So I did all of that. And then, a few hours later, I got the ticket. I had to go to Media City over in Manchester, over in Salford. So that was all fine. I was all kind of, geared up to go, got my orange shirt on again. And, literally about half an hour before I was due to leave, I got a phone call from this guy at this production company going, very sorry, but we've pulled your ticket.
Don't want your sort on our programme.
Don't want your sort on our pod. And I was like, oh, well, can you tell me why? And he's like, well, it can be one of several reasons. Then he went through. It can either be something that you've said, it can be... the fact that we need more balance in the audience, or it could be that somebody thinks you're a security risk. And I'm like, well, which one is it?
All of the above.
So I didn't get to go on the ITV.
So why do you think that would be specifically? Come on, you can say it.
Well, because he created Binhead's website.
That's right.
I think it might have had something to do with Binface. Yeah, it could easily have been.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure we'll come on to later. But, yeah, so I didn't get to go on that, but I did get to go on Question Time, which was very, very, very interesting. It was interesting to see from the other side of the telly screen.
Mm. See, I paid no attention whatsoever to this election because I knew beforehand that who I was going to vote for and they'll just fucking annoy me. Excuse my language. So I'm sitting here going, a seven-way debate, you said. I couldn't get to seven parties. List me the parties. Are there parties I'm unaware of? So there's Conservative, Labour, Reform, there's Liberal Democrats, there's Green Party. So I'm up to five. What am I missing?
Yes. You're from a very English point of view there, Paul.
Well, nobody gives a shit about Scotland and Wales. They don't care.
There, you see, those are the two. So that was my adventure on the BBC.
But you didn't get to ask any questions.
The way that it works is that you submit two questions,
right,
and you send them by email in advance, and then they pick six questions.
Okay.
And what they do is they pick them based on, you know, an aggregate of what most people are interested in asking about.
Mm.
And then they'll pick one question from that topic. And then the first question is always kind of a warm-up that's not filmed, and then they'll get to four or five on the show.
Okay.
Right.
And the woman that was sitting literally to my left had the fifth question, but they didn't get around to her. Otherwise, I'd have had even more screen time.
Did you get on? Did anybody see you at all? You were.
Oh, I was very prominent.
I'm just picturing this scene in the production office where they've given you a ticket, and then someone's checking that person's work, and they're going, "Okay, and you've got this guy in from Wales." But you gave him a ticket? You let him on the show? I'd love to know what it was that they saw that they just said, fuck no. He cannot. Ring him. He can't come.
Phone him now. Yeah.
The fact that it was so close to the event, you know, God.
Yeah, it was. It was literally half an hour before I was due to leave. In fact, if I'd have not been having a nap and the guy wake me up, I would have been in the car on the M56.
Was this the nap so that you could like stay out late? I'm not taking the piss here, and I'm totally, you know, I'm in the same zone as the.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to be a late night. I'm going to have an afternoon nap.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Lately.
I have a nap even when it's not going to be a late night.
2:30 in the afternoon, and I'm like, I need to go and have a kit now. Because I would have been out to at least 10:30.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus. Yeah. Oh, well, at least you can go back to sleep after that. You know, got the call. Right, I'll just have to go back to my nap then. Yeah.
So in the end, I watched it on TV and Sue went out to a community council meeting to be an actual politician. And that was my evening.
Ah. So tell me a bit more about Sue's role. Is she like kicking things up?
She is a parish or community councillor, a role which she's very good at. But she also hates.
Because she's got all the, how can I put this, parishioners who are disagreeing with what the council know is the right thing to do. The reason why I say that is we've had problems with our local pub, and we basically got the parish council to put an order on it so that it can't be sold for anything other than being a pub, which is quite a common thing. In country pubs, especially when it's like the last one in a village and all that kind of thing. Anyway, so we went along to the parish council meeting to sort of for it to be discussed. We stood around and everyone was agreeing. The landlord didn't bother to turn up because he's difficult, shall we say. But they deliberately set it up so that all of us who were like going along just go, you know, agree that this is a good thing. Because they deliberately set it up so that another major thing that's going on, there's a club for older people generally called the Test Valley Men's Shed, where they go and do tooling and you know, use lathes to make bowls and things like that. It's magic. It's a really cool thing. And it's not just men, it's women as well. Anyway, they're in a building that needs, which is pretty much falling down. And the parish councillor said, you need to basically take on this licence. And you need to, you know, you need to take some ownership of the looking after this place. Anyway, and that means, so that led to misunderstandings and all sorts of aggro over, we can't afford this, we're a, you know, we're great for the health of the community and all this kind of thing. So basically they set it up so that we'd all be in there to listen to this and side with the council, because what the council is saying is very logical, etc., etc. But it just turned into this massive bun fight, which is what I'm imagining Sue has to put up with on a regular basis. But we was like giggling children in the corner.
Yeah, she finds it incredibly frustrating because a lot of the things that people will, you know, even knock on our door and mention are not things that the community council can do anything about. You know, it's the county council that repairs the roads or gets the bin vans down or all that kind of stuff. So they are very much a kind of an advisory body to Flintshire, who generally just ignore the fuck out of anything they say anyway.
Yeah.
So I take it from your little story there, Marcus, that not turning country pubs into apartments might be one of your policies should you run for elected office.
Well, I think I might run for office this year, yes.
We've certainly got the look for it now, haven't you? You've got that kind of ruddy, kind of slightly flushed.
You're calling me a gammon?
Possibly.
So what would your... Yes, what I would two was, other policies
I think
be
that's
then,
a really
Marcus?
Good
what
policy to have. No, because if we hadn't have had a pub here, we wouldn't have made all the friends. We've only been here for 3 years, 3.5 years. We've made... I guess if you go to church, big church just down there, then that's an option, but I'm not churchy. So my only other option to go and meet local people is in the pub. And if you get rid of them, then where is everyone going to meet? It becomes a kind of like just a place where it's like a dorm where people go to sleep and then go up to London every day to work. And then they come home and they don't mix with their neighbours, whereas we really do here. So yes, the pub does have a huge effect on the community. Everyone loves it and they hate seeing what's happening to it.
Do you have a policy, John? What's your what would your attention grabber be?
Aside from the whole free fish and chips once a week for every household in Britain, which I think is just very sensible. obviously we can supply like a sort of a tofu plant-based fish option as well, but you know it's it's batter and chips is the main thing. I would have tougher sentences on people who drive in the middle of the motorway. You know, you've got four lanes and people just choose any lane that they like between 2, 3 and 4 and just sit in it. Tough sentences for those and tough sentences for people who talk loudly at gigs. That would be my policy. Thank you.
What about you, Paul?
I'm desperately trying to think of something funny, and I can't think of anything funny. Proportional representation. That's what I would really, if I was actually going to suggest a policy, I would change us to proportional representation, because I don't know whether it's necessarily a better political system, although I think personally it is, but it's certainly, I mean, I don't know why I bother voting, really. Then my vote is pointless where I am.
Not this time, probably, Paul.
Not this time, actually. No, you've got a fair point. But generally speaking, it is pretty pointless. And that's not right. That's not a democracy, in my opinion, or not the kind of democracy I would like to see. So that would be my position. Although, of course, if we did proportional representation at the moment, then the Reform Party would be doing very well indeed.
That's the problem. That's the flip
side of
the coin.
You've got to live with that.
You end up with the issue. I was talking to Chris about this just the other day, and he said when it can become a problem is when the loonies have the kind of balance of power.
Yeah.
Which can happen with PR. We've seen it in Italy and places like that. Yeah. sorry, I'd want to try it at least for a bit.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, all that seems to happen is whoever's in power gerrymanders all the boundaries around a way that they think they'll win more on the next election. And my vote has always been useless. I have never voted for the person that wins in my constituency.
No, neither have I. No. I've thought of another policy. Go back into Europe.
Okay. Going back into Europe. Ooh, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Is it... Yes is the obvious answer to that, but we would be treated like dirt, wouldn't we? We'd be slime.
I'm sure we'll come on to this.
We deserve that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm sure we'll come on to this in a little while, but Count Binface has an interesting EU-related policy.
Does he?
Go on.
Which is to invite other European countries to join the United Kingdom.
Genius!
In a kind of Union of Europe, so to speak.
It's fair enough.
I can't imagine people biting his hand off for it, but yeah. Whatever okay. works.
I want to know what other, because obviously we've already indicated that you've worked on Count Binhead. Is it Binhead or Binface? Binface.
It's Binface. It's Binface.
What I want to know what his policies are, because I've never looked at his policies. Come on, give me the rundown.
Good policies.
There's two websites that I think that you should look at, Paul. One, before we get on to Count Binface, is stopthetories.vote.
Oh, yeah, I know this.
And it is a, what do they call it, tactical voting website. Yeah. You put your postcode in and it tells you who's more likely to defeat the Tories. The other one, of course, is countbinface.com. And we have 24 policies for 24. Mm-hmm. Some of them funnier than others. My sort of few favourites are that all bosses of water companies should be forced to take a dip in British rivers just to see how they like it. National service to be introduced for all former prime ministers.
Yeah. I like Claudia Winkleman's fringe to be an A-list, grade A-listed building. Yes. That's a good one.
And my personal favourite, shops that play Christmas music before December to be closed down and turned into public libraries.
That's the thing. They're all really good policies, you know.
Yeah.
They are.
There's nothing there that I would disagree with.
The funny thing is that since the manifesto was launched on Monday, I have seen on Twitter, I don't want to call it X, I've seen on Twitter people going, these are all really sensible.
They are.
You know, I can get behind it. If I was in Richmond and Northallerton, I would vote for this.
Yeah.
And see, the other thing is, you know, they're achievable as well. Unlike some of the wild promises made by the politicians, one of his pledges is, I will build at least one affordable house. I mean, that's achievable, right? You've got to respect that.
I did see... It was on Twitter after you shared something that somebody, I assume, is in the Richmond borough or whatever it's called, the election
constituency.
Thank you. Saying, please don't do this. Please don't do this. We don't want Rishi back. You know, a vote for Count Binface is a vote for not Labour and all that kind of thing. But I mean, proportional representation. That's why we need it.
Mm.
Although it could end up with Count Binface being some kind of minister under proportional representation.
And that's so bad?
No, it probably wouldn't be, would it, really?
I was writing about this on my blog, actually, and looking back at it. It's not a purely British phenomenon, having these kind of perennial novelty candidates.
Oh, no.
You know, they have them all over the world. We've had screaming Lord Such...
Since the 60s.
David Such, who stood 39 times for election. We had Miss Whiplash and the Corrective Party.
Daring to bell. That one, I like it.
That stood for a bit. And now, of course, we had Lord Buckethead, and now, due to copyright reasons, There cannot be Lord Buckethead, so which is now we have Count Binface. So how do you, what do you think about these novelty candidates?
It's great. Anything that provides a bit of levity. And it's very British. I think that's the key thing, is that I like that it's a British sense of humour. You also get ones that are weird, cranky little independents who aren't intentionally being funny.
But they are.
We have a local one for the Wessex party, and they're basically wanting independence for Wessex, which is this kind of weird defined area of, you know, sort of the southwest.
Yeah, we're in Wessex.
Yeah. But apparently it counts in Witney as well. So I don't quite know how that works. Have you got any ones by you? Any of these kind of the more quirky?
I've just got the
boring ones.
Reform and Green, and yes, it's the five, the usual five. Mm. But I've just looked on StopTheTories.vote, and they can't say.
No, I get that.
But they're saying that they expect currently Labour to be second by some margin, but not good enough to win. Mm. But Labour have never come second in this constituency. So...
We don't have
that's
any
how blue it is around
novelty
here.
Candidates here at all.
No, we don't either.
Actually, even in my area, they're saying it. Wow, I'm gobsmacked that people are saying that they can't say for North Dorset, because it's always been Liberal Democrat.
Has it?
Hmm. Yeah. It's always been Tory, but the second has always been Liberal Democrat. If you're tactical voting, you vote Liberal Democrat.
Yeah, and I imagine there's a lot of Tories who are hoping that the surge in support for Labour will split the vote, because it almost certainly will around here. But the two together, Libs and Labs here, would beat the Tory this time.
Yeah.
No question.
I mean, we have that same problem.
But this is what they're talking about in Clacton, because at the moment it's literally around about 30% each for Reform, the Tories and Labour. They all get... 30-something, or I think Labour was on, 27 or something like that. Mm. So this is actually a really good moment for all of those kind of progressive parties, Lib Dems, whoever, to basically get behind one candidate. I wouldn't even mind if it was the Tory in Clacton. Just to keep Barrage out of, the public eye.
Yeah,
well, that would be fantastic, yes.
What do you think? What do you think of the thing in the media about? Because this is a tricky one. It's a legitimate problem of representation, right? So you've got to represent. You've got to fairly represent all of the different political parties. That's what the BBC have got to do, and so you get some of these more edge parties sitting alongside Labour and Conservatives, but I get that. But then, in some ways, that's actually not representative, because in reality, those people don't get anywhere near the level of votes of Conservative and Labour. Do you see what I'm getting at? But they absolutely get as much screen time, so it makes them look more mainstream than they are. What do we just get them to sit further away from the camera? Maybe something like that.
I'm not sure I know the answer to this, but another thing happened during Brexit, and I think this was Emily Maitlis was saying this in her book, that they were wanted to get some financial experts in to discuss the financial likely outcomes of Brexit. And they had, I'll make the number up, but 480 financial experts who were all Remainers, and one... Yeah. He was not. So, and they had him, the one, plus one of the 480.
Yeah, when you should have 480 all sitting crowded on one side of the room and one by himself on the other.
Yeah. That just says it all to me.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is, though, Paul. I haven't got a clue.
It's a difficult one. It must be a real challenge for them to get that balance right.
Yeah, I don't know sure they care that much, particularly, No, I mean, the whole Laura Kunzberg was been very, it couldn't be more obvious, how much they want to sort of appease the government and not have their license taken away from them. And their independence from having to do advertising. I think it's quite a, I think it's quite clear. Well, Fiona Bruce was in an interview and she was saying how the right wingers will accuse them of being too left wing and the left wingers will accuse them of being too right wing. So I guess essentially you'll see what you want to see from things like the debates and news coverage and things.
I have not a small crush on Fiona Bruce.
Oh, now
a large crush.
Can I just quickly tell you my Fiona Bruce story, which isn't really a story, but when Lee and I were going to Madrid a couple of months ago, she was at Heathrow. And she was standing in the queue for, I think it's Giraffe, one of the places you can get breakfast. And she had three people who we assume were their sons, you know, were her sons, standing next to her. And the temptation was to go up and say to Fiona, good, better, best.
Fantastic.
But sorry, that was my Fiona Bruce story. It was,
but it might have been, yeah, it could have been him. It could have nothing to do with her.
Yeah, well, yeah, there could have been three rent boys for all we know. I mean, you know.
Still works then.
yeah, true.
Have you ever seen a famous person and gone up to them?
No, I'm always too coward.
Yeah, me too.
Can't think.
I'd never. I've smiled at a famous person. Well,
that's brave.
It is brave. It was. Do you know Rosie Jones, the comedian?
Yeah.
She was passing, and I recognised her. I just smiled, and I thought that probably came across as very creepy. And I'll be sorting you out later, kind of thing.
You must have, Marcus, because you were famous, so you must have spoken to other famous people, surely.
Yeah, but not. I didn't have to sort of go up to them. And I think that's what you mean, Andy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being part of the hoi polloi, I met somebody, let's say I met, went backstage after seeing Crowded House on Monday. Neil Finn is one of my all-time heroes, so I would feel very sort of like, oh, hello, I'm Marcus, and I play the guitar a bit. And it would be cringing. It would be so awful, so I would probably just stay in the corner and have a beer and just be happy to be in the same room as.
Yeah. Is having anything worth saying that hasn't been said to them a million times before?
I love that song. Yeah, good.
Is that why you came?
A lot of people.
Yeah. Is that why you came to the concert? Yeah. No, I think there's also that worry of like you have your heroes being a disappointment. That if you go up to someone and you catch them on a bad day and you're trying just to say...
They're being an arsehole.
Yeah, they're just being an arse towards you, which does happen. Because, you know,
humans... I don't worry too much about that because I kind of recognise everybody's going to be an arsehole.
But I disagree. Because Neil Finn, my example, I like one of the reasons why I love Crowded House so much is they kind of write pop songs. They write catchy pop tunes that everyone can sing along to, but they're really cool as well. So if I met him and he wasn't really cool, I would be like, oh, I wish I
had
okay.
Yeah, so I mean. Who's the person that you've seen without, not if you've gone to a concert or something like that, but you've passed in the street, like, John did with Rosie, that got you the most excited?
I've remembered somebody that I did go up and say
hello. Okay, go on then.
Prince Harry.
Oh, really?
He was having a beer outside the Cricketers in Hartley Whitney.
I remember you telling me.
Sunny afternoon. And we all went up and some people, of which I was one, and he was, you know, a couple of very, very dangerous looking blokes with him. And, you know, right, say hello. Yeah, he's like, all right. He was literally having a pint. Shook his hand.
So,
and, said hello. So there you go.
Are you sure it was him?
Certain.
Right.
Absolutely certain.
Gosh.
I ended up in a lift with Seal once.
Oh, cool guy.
Totally wasted on me because I didn't realise it was Seal until afterwards. So we had a weird experience where there were two big guys in a lift in a posh hotel we were staying in. And me and Kath got into the lift and they held the door for a third guy who came in. And they were chatting with one another. And I noticed that Kath looked a bit kind of starstruck. But I just thought it was because this guy was very handsome and good looking and all the rest of it. And then weirdly, he started singing in the lift, right? And then we got off and I just kind of walked away thinking, well, that was weird. And it turned out, according to my wife, it was Seal. And I had no idea why.
Was he singing something about we're never going to survive unless we get to floor five or something?
Oh, nice.
Very good.
Like it. No, singing it makes him sound like an asshole because it makes him sound like he was performing. He was, I don't know how, it was just kind of, he was messing around, basically. He perfectly nice guy, was very nice, said hello to Kath, which I thought was weird as well, you know, and the whole thing was completely wasted on me, but yeah, so that's, but the one celebrity that I saw that I'm the most excited about, or was at the time, is I was a kid and I was in London on the Underground. And I saw Tom Baker with the scarf. He actually was wearing the Doctor Who scarf. Can you believe that?
I can't top that. That's brilliant.
That was amazing.
You say you can't top that, John, but I met Peter Davidson.
Yeah.
I got him to record you a message.
You met Peter Davidson. See, that's not my meeting a celebrity.
But he recorded a message for you on your birthday.
He did.
That's sweet. It's lovely. That was nice of you, Andy.
Oh, it was lovely. But I can't claim to have, you know, I just basked in its glory, you know. But that was lovely. That was really, really nice.
Oh, what a sweet thing to do, Andy. That's very nice of you. See, you're not a complete arsehole like everybody says.
Well, I was trying to obviously make up for something that I'd previously done to John at some point.
We have Mike from the telly in the pub, and I can't remember his surname. He's a sports presenter at the BBC, and he's just known as Mike from the telly. It's hilarious. It's not my local pub, the one I just mentioned earlier. He lives in Overton, which is down the road. But yeah, everyone knows him, and he's a nice
Mike from the telly.
So yeah, they're not all unapproachable.
Can you imagine how awful it would be? You know, there's competitions every now and again, aren't there? Go for dinner with a celebrity. Could you imagine how awful that would be if you won something like that?
Yeah, awkward.
We did it
people
the other way
pay
around.
Money to do
we
it.
We did it. When I was in the band many years ago, people, you know, radio phone-ins to win dinner with us. It's not so bad when you've got like three people in the band.
Yeah.
And two people come to dinner with you because it's eating dinner and drinking. It's not that bad. But if it was one-to-one, it would be awful.
Oh, God.
How bloody bad with that. We basically just were, you know, young lads being silly. So it was all right. But yeah. Yeah, especially if they were like, you know, like, in, been secretly in love with you for 45 years. You know,
yes.
Like that.
Oh.
You go back to their house and there's like a shrine to Marcus Lillington in the cupboard.
You're a mentalist.
There will be someone. The chances are somewhere in the world there is somebody like that with you, Marcus. From a probability point of view, it's not unreasonable to think that there will be a shrine somewhere and a serial killer waiting for you.
Strong, but, you know, I might have an admirer.
There's a sea of candles that are constantly lit underneath pictures of Marcus on the cover of Smash Hits magazine.
Yeah.
That exists.
That makes me so happy to think that might exist in the world.
Well, in one universe it does, that's for sure. If you believe in that sort of thing.
Oh, we're now relying on the multiverse.
We seem to have steered away. From these,
yeah, go on.
The general election topic.
It's boring.
It is really boring, actually. It is incredibly boring. And one of the things that I've been doing in this sort of last week or so, because I thought, I looked at all the political party websites, you know, when the campaign started, and they're all kind of universally terrible. And I thought, I'll check in again when the manifestos have been released. Because surely then these website designs will be, out there, you know, not just to tell people about policies, but, you know, inspire people what the vision is. And none of them are. They're all universally terrible. And it just kind of made me wonder why these party websites are just so bad. There is literally nothing inspiring about any of them.
I wonder that there's not enough time to sort of do what we would normally do to ensure that the really important content was up front and a priority.
Yeah, but they didn't come up with the manifesto like on the Monday night and launch it on the Tuesday.
Well, perhaps they did. That would explain the fundamental problem with British democracy.
Yeah, you'd think, especially knowing that there was going to be an election this year at some point. Let's really rock this up and do it properly. I don't know, Andy. I don't appear to know anything today.
It just kind of beggars belief, really, because, you know, you would think that the purpose of a design would be to, you know, communicate and convince and inspire people and at least kind of, you know, brand things so that people can, you know, identify with it. But they're all just exactly the same bland, uninspiring typography, terrible layouts, inconsistent colours.
So
virtually no user experience. Mm. It's awful.
But so actually, in truth, very representative of the political parties they represent. Uninspired.
And the web in general, I think.
Uninspired, poor user experience, you know, lack of consistency. These are all party traits. They're doing an excellent job, the websites, at representing their parties.
Yes. So what they should have done is just
that's a point I
remove the text and just like just do something like PlayStation from back in the day and just put some weird random shit on the screen and, you know, I think just leave it at that. So I think it would certainly be more interesting.
I think we're beyond manifestos now, aren't we? It's now kind of more about catchy ideas. If it's more than about three or four words of unachievable goals, it's not really worth saying, is it? It seems to be my impression of the whole thing.
Some people do take very seriously what they're being promised. And I'm always like, why? They all don't stand by it, generally. Not always. Yeah. That's probably a little too strong. But what people promise during an election is to be ignored, isn't it? It's just look what you've done for the people in power, what have you done for the past 5 years? Oh, great job. All right, well, you might get my vote then. Shit job, yeah, you've got to go.
Yeah, you've got to judge people on what they've done, haven't you, more than what they say they're going to do.
If you've got a new party, you know, let's say Deform, and you've got a party that's trying to kind of reinvent himself, to me, it's no different to a product launch. Mm. You know, and if you just listed the ingredients on the side of the tin of your new product, nobody would want to buy it. So you get creative and try and come up with an ad campaign or, you know, at least try somehow to use design to inspire or ideas to inspire people. But even the newish parties or even the parties that could afford to be, you know, more on the edge like the Greens, yeah, because they know they're not going to win. They're not going to form the government. So they could afford to actually take risks, and nobody does.
Hmm. I suspect there will have been some testing done.
Bloody hell. I don't think there has been.
Ten years ago or whatever, to say, stay boring, don't say anything outrageous, and you will get more votes.
Yep. I think there's a big element of that, having to be so bland, really. Don't offend anybody, don't be divisive.
This is probably a bit of a leap, but 20 years ago, television advertising was, quite a lot of it was utter rubbish, but quite a lot of it was really good. Guinness adverts, for example, you know, very inspiring, wonderful, big budget, loveliness. Now it's all shit, all of it. So clearly, testing has been done that says all of this kind of big budget stuff, you know, outside of the box thinking about advertising does not work. Keep it really dumbed down and shit, and you'll sell more things. God, I'm in a bit of a downplay.
I liked it when we were talking about meeting famous people. That was much more fun. Yeah.
There is one candidate, of course, who's just not afraid to think out of the box.
Well, yes. Out of the bin.
Or even think out of the bin. Somebody with a clear plan of bold action for a space future.
Yeah, but the site looks terrible, doesn't it?
Like you were saying, Andy, I mean, it's just so bland.
Yeah, I mean, you've nailed it, mate. No, seriously, I've just gone to a Green Party, Labour, Conservative and Reform, right? And I was sitting here thinking, oh, yeah, well, Andy's bound to say, you know, the design's terrible. You know, very, very uncreative, you know. And me and Andy have different approaches to design, you know. I come from a user experience and conversion optimization background. Andy comes from a pretentious art school background. And so... but... You're right, they're terrible. Actually, I would say out of all of them, and I hate saying this, but I think the Conservative one is probably the best, because at least they have their policies on the homepage, which none of the others do. How can you not have your policies on the homepage, you know?
Or your open. Conservatives will have the most money. So that's potentially why.
No, not this time.
No?
Yeah.
No, and they're spending. I mean, I think I saw something this morning that Labour have spent something like £1.5 million on Meta for Instagram and Facebook ads, but the Tories have only spent 800,000. You could probably say, well, you know, the Tories aren't going to spend it on Meta because, you know, 80-year-old Tory members are not going to be sitting there flicking through Instagram. So you can't quite, you know, it's not quite analogous. But apparently, no, they've not been spending anywhere near as much.
I think that is a waste of time, probably.
I mean, Labour, I'm particularly disappointed in their website, you know, because it's literally a picture of Keir Starmer holding a baby with the word change written by it. You know, what the hell? Mean?
Or the baby gets it.
I missed that. Yeah,
that's the subtext.
That's the show title. Yeah. Vote for me or the baby gets it.
I mean, you can understand with the Reform Party just having Nigel Dickhead plastered all over it, because they haven't got anything other than his personality, basically, that appeals to a certain kind of dickhead.
Well, I've done a whole series of blog posts.
Is all just a bit. He's been steering it around to be a bloody big advert for his newsletter. Subscribe
I need work.
So do I.
Bring it on. So I did a whole series of kind of blog posts where I was looking at the Labour and the Conservative websites, you know, before the manifestos, after the manifestos. I've done one actually studying all the websites for that Labour have done since 97.
Oh, really?
And looking at the changes of, you know, design. And it's actually really interesting because they kind of encapsulate all of the changes of taste and technology that we've seen, you know, in the wider web. All the way across.
That's quite interesting.
And then what I did was I took them and kind of just imagined what I would do if Angela Rayner knocked on my door and said, could you design the website? And then I thought, I need a little bit of balance here. I need to be seen as being impartial. So if I've done Labour, who else should I do? And then I thought, I'm in no mood to help the Tories. Not that they would ever look at my website anyway. So who am I going to do? And I did Count Benface.
Oh, I thought I was leading to Reform then. I thought, oh, God. For balance. No,
I did the real novelty candidate, not the pretend novelty candidate. And so I just did this kind of design exercise, putting it out there. And, lo and behold, Count Benface did get on the Intergalactic Telecom. and say, I'm launching the manifesto on Monday. Can you, do you think we could actually make this into a website?
So did he start by saying, greetings, earthlings? Please tell me he did.
No, he didn't. He did say, one of my best friends is Count Binface.
So what was he like to work with?
Well, the guy behind it, John Harvey, is a comedian and a comedy writer. So does stuff for Have I Got News For You, and Count Binface is, you know, obviously just a every now and again when the opportunity arises kind of distraction. But yeah, lovely, lovely guy. Already had a Squarespace website, so I had to basically work on that platform. I already had the designs because I'd kind of put the framework together in my blog post. So I spent a weekend, and that's all it took.
That's cool.
Very good.
And it looks good, so, Andy.
I did that for PR rather than for money, and just for the ability to be able to talk about it and, you know, ride on the Count's cape.
All the things that we tell young designers not to do.
Yeah, exactly. Just race them. You've let us down.
But no, I volunteered to do this rather than ask. So then it's up to me. But yeah, no, a bit of fun. And it just does go to show, if you do put stuff out there, then, you know, sometimes
you can get to
notice.
Do free work for someone.
In this instance. Oh, hang on a minute. I've just had a message from Taylor Swift.
Stop calling me.
Yeah, will you stop?
Stop leaving those little packages.
What I want to know is how you got the screenshots for the Labour website all the way back to 97, because whenever I try and use the Wayback Machine, it never renders all the graphics for me. That's what I want to know.
There were two particular things. It depends on how the site was built. So quite often, you know, with those old .asp sites or, you know, old technology, it just has gone.
Yeah,
right.
So Labour's site from 97 does not exist at all. There is nothing you can find. 2001, there are bits of it on the Wayback Machine.
Right.
But it's very, if you go to the homepage of Labour in 2001, there are loads of missing images, loads of gaps. Mm. So what I had to do was to click around on what they did have for the archive and basically recreate the page myself.
Ah, okay.
But to have something from 23 years ago, at least, you know, something is remarkable.
Amazing. Oh, it's not a criticism. You know, it was just, I was curious how you did it.
But I really do want to try to find if the 97 site exists, even in artwork form. So I have emailed Labour headquarters, but they're obviously too busy doing something else to reply to me.
What could it be?
Honestly, it's almost like there's an election going on.
So, just to wrap things up, we said that we weren't going to get political, but by the time we record the next podcast, this election will be over. What are your predictions, Marcus Lillington?
200 plus majority for Labour. Maybe not quite that much. 150. 200 is too many. 150 plus majority for Labour.
And opposition?
Ooh, that's a tricky one, isn't it? Still the Tories.
Mm. Okay. Paul?
I agree with Marcus.
John? Yeah.
This is a really boring segment.
I don't want to say it out loud. I don't want to jinx it. I would like to think that the last election wouldn't be repeated, which was turned out to be a Conservative landslide, which was not what I expected. I expected it to tip much more the other way, not completely, you know, but I think the Conservatives would just, you know, scrape in, but they didn't. They were, you know, red areas became blue, and it was a bit of a shit show. So I just don't want to jinx anything, but I'm not a Labour supporter, but I would hope that, you know, anyone but Tory, basically.
Well, I'm going to predict that Count Binface beats his record of 250 votes. And I'm gonna say that he's gonna get 500 votes in Richmond and Northallerton.
Yeah, but his website could hold him back.
So thanks very much for tuning into this informative and, well, knowledgeable election special from One Foot in the Grave. And we will see you after the election.
Government willing.